From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
And I'm Chad Beter.
And I'm Andrew Richards.
And welcome to Defrag Tools Part 5, Sweeps Week.
Cinco.
Yep. Of... Tell us what we're talking about still.
Windows Performance Toolkit Part 5. We're continuing looking at the CPU. This time we're looking at weight analysis, which is kind of like hang analysis, rather than the opposite, which is, you know, CPU consumption, saturation. So... we're kind of close to, the command that we had last week is very close to what we need for the last part of what we need. This is the script that is available in the downloads, which we, I mentioned a couple weeks ago. I never actually been over it, but it simply is, it's make sure it's stopped, it starts what we need, it uses a 256 megabyte buffer, it has a pause statement so that you do your repro, and then I make sure that the file that I'm about to create is, doesn't exist, and then... merge it out, and then automatically open WPA. What we need is this keyword right here. This is the golden nugget that adds what we need. This one and this one. So C switch stands for context switch. And we kind of talked about this in one of the early episodes. There is the sample graph and the precise graph. Sample graph is what we looked at last week with all the nice cool lines and the stacks and everything else that tells you how hot things are. Context switch tells you what the stack was when you got scheduled. The thing is, the stack's kind of useful, kind of not, because it will just be the stack when it's sitting on wait for single object or something like that, some synchronization thing. And if you don't know what synchronization is, go back to episode, I don't know, somewhere in the teens.
Just go back.
And I'll link to it. The one on semaphores and mutexes and all that stuff way back in the WinDBG days.
It's one of my favorite episodes.
Oh, yeah.
It was a classic.
Semaphores. Oh,
baby.
That's our, it's kind of like our Trouble with Tribbles episode.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah.
So the other one you need, so this gives you a fair bit of information. It tells you what the stack was when you were waiting. And so that shows you in the program what happened. That gold bit that you need is the second bit, the ready thread, which is wrapped ready. No, you can't, it's off the screen, but it's ready thread. What ready thread does, it gives you the stack also of who woke you up. So if you have someone who's stuck on something, who say maybe wait for multiple objects or single objects, over here you'll have the other thread that may be in your process or outside your process. It may actually be the kernel doing it for you, which just happens for like sleeps. It will give you the thread that woke you up, right? And so if this guy's been hung waiting for ages, he's been waiting because he's waiting for someone to fire his event on him. It's this guy's inability or lackadaisicalness to actually fire the event that actually stopped that guy, right? It's all a chain. So as much as this context switch is interesting and it tells you where in the program you were jammed and then you've finally been released, it's the ready thread that actually tells you why it didn't get round to running, all right? And so let's capture one of these things and see what it looks like. It's running now. What I'm going to do is use Aramagosis's demo app, which shows this quite nicely. And where is it? So in this case, what I'm going to do is I'm going to hang the UI, right? And for 10 seconds, this program's going to sit there, and then after a couple of seconds, if I touch it, you'll get the not responding brackets. Mm-hmm. If you had proc dump at this point, you could do the minus H, so proc dump minus H vert mem test, and you would have got a dump file when that happened. And then here's the hang completed. I'll actually note that this dialogue is stopping me going back to here, right? It's because I haven't pressed OK. That in itself is a wait event. Yeah. I can't get to this UI, and we can see that as well in the trace. So we'll press OK on that. We'll press the pause. It will stop everything, merge out the file to a new file, and then in this script it also opens the file that I made. So we can look at all the CPU stuff and go, yes, it was doing stuff, and then not really get very far because we're looking at nothing, right? It doesn't tell you why it's hung, and this is where All those other keywords are completely useless. You need a lot of the keywords to give you the data, like, you know, the process name and the thread name and stuff, but you actually aren't going to get to root cause that way. So that graph's actually not going to help you.
It's not very interesting because the CPU wasn't very busy anyway.
Mm. Now, if it was busy, if you were waiting and the person who woke you up was saturated, that kind of is. But in my case, nobody was pegging. So that's the difference between sample and precise. Sample is analysis of hotness. Precise is analysis of coldness. Right, so what we want is that graph instead. There's no other graphs that really are pertinent in this one. Now, we're only interested in delays inside VetMem test, so that's filtered down to that guy. And what you're seeing here is the times that it was scheduled to run. And so the absence here in the middle for 10 seconds-ish, and if I actually zoom in here a bit better, I actually can probably drag an area that is nearly exactly 10 seconds.
10.01. Not quite good enough.
Yeah, somewhere around there, right? Not surprising it's 10 seconds for the sleep, right? So let's look at the data and actually get the real essence of that. What we have in this guy is a thread who waited 10 seconds, right? And that's what blocked the UI and then it got released. So with weight analysis, it's always at the thread level. You're never going to look at it at a process level. You're looking at one particular thread's issue. And so that's why you want the thread here to be pretty far on the left-hand side of the aggregation. The columns it gives you by default aren't the best. What I'm going to do is scroll right down the bottom to the OpenView editor and add the columns that I want this way. Now, it has these predefined ones that are just turned off. What we want to do is see the process that was running, so VetMem test, the thread that was jammed, and then what stack it was jammed on, what it was waiting on. So that's why we added the stack. And then next thing we want to do is, and where's the Reading thread IDs, that one. We want to know the process that woke me up, the thread within that process that woke me up, and the stack of the process that fired the event rather than received the event being fired. So we kind of reordered it in here. I could have grabbed any column and added them in here, get rid of them. It's a very fluid interface. When it comes to statistics, I can stuff around with these and change them to different aggregation. What I do want is a column called the ready time, the ready max, right? So I'm just going to get rid of the sum to make it, the weight max. So I'm going to get rid of these three columns so it doesn't confuse us as much. We want the weight. Who had to wait the most, right? And then we're going to focus in lower and lower and lower. Lots of columns needs to be a bit squeezed up a bit so we get some space. Once again,
go big monitor.
Big monitor.
Be helpful.
So here is, so the longest wait in this process was 10 seconds. Actually, we haven't started loading symbols, so let's do that in the background. So this guy waited 10 seconds. This is in US, which is that microseconds? Or whatever it is.
It's
in
US is, microseconds.
And you can see the decimal point's down here. So this is 10 million microseconds, which is 10 seconds. Good example of how Windows is not accurate. What doesn't, it's not a real-time OS, right? He asked to stop. Aaron asked his program to stop for 10 seconds.
Yeah.
He didn't. He stopped for 10 seconds and 13 milliseconds. Mm-hmm. Right, we do not guarantee that you will be scheduled on a particular time, right? And we know exactly to the microsecond when you were scheduled, but we can't guarantee the weights that you asked for, right? And so if we look at this guy, the longest wait is there. It was in this stack, and I'll just expand this out. And so what happened was, this is the stack that I just press right. It went into some VetMem test code, fine, lots of it. Then there was a dialog message on the screen, which is the GUI itself, right? And then I pressed a button because I've said stop. Well, here's my code pressing the button. And then the code within that button, here's the message being sent. So this is the window, like the on-click event that you'd get in programming languages, and it'd be the WM button event, you know, pure Windows code. And then it finally called into his code again. And then he called sleep, all right? And then you can actually see it going into the kernel. Oops, scroll a bit. So it goes into NTDLL, which is the application side. Had to do some WoW mangling for some reason.
Because you're running 32-bit code.
No, I ran the 64-bit version. Well, anyway, it must be the 32-bit version. It must be, right?
Yeah.
Otherwise, it wouldn't be there. And then it called inside the kernel, delay execution on the thread, and then it did all this magic that swapped the context out. And it said, swap me back into the CPU at a particular time.
Wake me up in 10 seconds.
Yeah. And so what it does is it actually queues a timer DPC, and we covered that in one of the episodes as well, way back in WinDBG, and go watch the episode for that. So let's find out who woke him up. In this case, it was actually the idle process. So each core has a thread associated which knows how to make it go idle. And roughly, it's not a thread that does nothing. It's actually a thread that has code that uses like Intel PPM and AMD PPM and other CPU vendors. And the PPM is processor power management. We've talked about this before as well. It knows how to tell the CPU to go to sleep. When that's the idle loop is the function that's going round and round and round doing that logic when it's scheduled, when there's nothing else to be scheduled. Every time it comes around the loop, which is when a C state ends. So it will enter into C1, C2, C3, and deeper and deeper. Each one of them are longer and longer and longer. When the C state returns and has said, okay, I've finished being asleep, we are now turned on again. It comes out of this loop, and then it runs this function called retire DPC list. You will see on our system with CPU power, very regularly, this being the reason why your wait has ended. Because a lot of waits end because of timeouts, and the DPC timer table is the reason why it times out. And here it is, and then this is timer expiration. So DPCs is doing both regular DPCs and timer DPCs. This is the timer part of the function. And then it's expiring the table, and then you get a weird symbol. And then it swapped in that guy and made him run.
So you can kind of see here both ends of that. So you can see his code calling sleep,
yeah,
which translates into essentially a timer DPC.
Mm-hmm.
And then later you can see the reason we woke up was because that timer DPC, yep, fired.
And the other one we had was the message box. Remember how it was stuck up there making the UI? Well, the message box itself is also a delay. And so it was holding, I think it's one of these, it was holding, I shouldn't have been pressing the button so much, but here's the other side of it. So where are we? So, right. So it called sleep, and then after the sleep finished, it actually popped up a message box.
Mm.
And so at the most, because I was moving the mouse around and stuff, the most it ever waited was 312 seconds for that thread to pump messages to say, have you finally finished? Have you finally received a mouse click or something? And then we can find out that if we keep on holding right, unsurprisingly, that I clicked something in the kernel. This happens to be the system threads that it's running. The WinSRV has made Win32K threads, and then raw input came in. So raw input is mice and keyboard and stuff like that. And then that was what was used to fire the message box has terminated. So it's quite interesting how you can really trace X to Y to Z. Now, if you have a chain of waits, what you do is, and the reason why I add these columns, you can follow why people are waiting and waiting. So what you do is you grab this process and this thread number, and then you see what his max wait was. And if he's been waiting a long time as well, the odds are is he was waiting for ages. He did his work really quickly, right? And then he fired the event that then that you go. A good example of that is exclusive locks to something. You have this shared reader lock model in a lot of programs where multiple people can read it at the same time, but only one person can have exclusive lock. Well, this guy may have wanted an exclusive lock. And so he gets it. The next person who does a read doesn't get to join the shared readers. They get queued up at the end. So this guy, the first top guy, might have been a reader, but this guy got there first as an exclusive, and then someone else had it. So what you can do is follow this person back to here, see the exclusive got jammed for ages because of a large wait number. Why did he get released finally to do his work? And then you can look at the guy above it and say, okay, all these shared readers were actually holding the lock. And you'll finally see that the shared reader invoked this guy and this guy invoked this. And you can work your whole way back. And I've seen support cases where we've gone back 10, 20, 30 in these chains and finally got to that person who's waiting on a bad disk IO that never completed.
Yeah.
Or, you know, because of bad hardware and stuff. And so it's quite an amazing trip that you can make with no real, changing of the process. You don't have to have logging. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to have any instrumentation in the code, but you can dive into it and work out the entire path. Now, in this case, I haven't tried it, but I'm guessing if I add the DPC graph, we'll actually see the timer. What we need is the DPC type of type timer, and in here somewhere would be the timer that fired.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really it for the weight analysis. We kind of kept it as a separate episode because it's something you need to look at separately.
Yeah.
The big keyword is that script file. If you miss this, so I kept on saying C switch, and I deliberately missed this to make it a point at the end. The dispatcher keyword. If you miss that, it looks exactly the same, but all of the weight information is missing in the graph. So all the ready information is there, but all the weight information is missing. So you can't find out who delayed the most. And when you expand it out, it will just put a question mark on the process, the thread, and the stack. That's what the dispatcher does. The dispatcher is the dispatcher executive. Is that the right word for it in the kernel?
Yeah. Sure, I'll go with that.
He's the guy who schedules things, right? He's the guy who knows that I have woken up a thread to start him running, and that's the data provider that has the information that's augmented in that graph for additional columns. It doesn't have its own graph. It's like the stack's being added to a graph. In this case, this provider adds data to the graph, and so you must have that. So the two that make weight analysis possible are these two, and you need the C switch for the left one and the ready thread for the right one. Once again, you always have to have proc and loader on the front. When it comes to weight analysis, because you may be waiting on high CPU, always get the other guys who give you the hotness at the same time. And that is it for weight analysis.
All right. And that's the show for this week. If you have questions, you can write us at defragtools@microsoft.com. And we'll see you next week.
Come on, Gove loves emails.
He does.
See you next week.
See you next week.